Hello and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. Debut Australian novelists are enjoying their heyday at the moment. It seems that every other day I'm learning about another fabulous Aussie writer ticking getting published off their bucket list. Moreover, the quality of these stories is simply outstanding. None more so than the debut novel from my next guest author. Maxine Fawcett is a Sydney-based author who runs a media and marketing business with her husband. Hailing from England originally, Maxine obtained a BA in Communication and Art History from the University of East London before moving on to gain lots of different experiences doing variable work until landing on her feet with an advertising company and later moving out here to Australia.
I first met
Max, as she's known by many, a few years back as a fellow aspiring author, and it has given me immense joy to see Max hit her stride in her publishing journey and find a home for her wonderful novel. Everything is Perfect, published by Penguin earlier this year, is a book that takes a wry look at marriage, motherhood, and how in middle age we can lose sight of our true selves. A compulsive novel that had me flipping pages well into the night. And so it is with such pleasure that I welcome Max to the podcast today. Hi, Max.
Hi, Claudine. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for the introduction. You went way back in time in my life. I was like, oh yeah, I did. I went to the University of East London. I forgot about that. So thank you.
Congratulations on Everything is Perfect. How does it feel to finally be able to call yourself a published author?
Do you know what? It's been 2 months, I think tomorrow or something like that. I actually still can't believe it that it's actually happened after striving to have a book in my hands with my name on it for a decade. That it's actually got to this point is very surreal. It's, you know, sounds a cliche, but I feel like if somebody tomorrow wake up and it'd be like, oh, okay, I'll get back to writing on my computer again and nothing's happened. It's, yeah, it's been amazing. But I also have put the work in, so I'm actually really proud of myself, actually, that I got here. Still feels like a dream.
Yeah. Is it everything you hoped it would be?
Yes. Do you know what? The Australian publishing community, I've just loved. I've just come to love them over the last year. Everybody is so supportive. We all are like behind each other's work and behind each other's publications and novels. That's what has been really surprising for me, how everybody is, just lifts each other up the whole time. I've not seen anything in the contrary to that. So yeah, that's the first thing I'd like to say. I'm just really welcoming bunch of people, really. Yeah, that's what I've loved so far. Apart from that, yeah, I mean, you know, the thing I've learned about myself, I think, in the last couple of months is I've had this amazing thing that has happened with a lot of hard work behind it. And you can still get the days when you doubt yourself a bit. So it is still that up and down kind of thing. And I just think that's completely a natural part of the process, really, of going through something that you've wanted for a long time.
Are there aspects of the journey or post-publication process that have surprised you?
Surprised me? Oh my goodness. I think, yeah, the amount of messages I've had from people that have read the book, you know, I can't forget that people are taking on board their own interpretation of what happens to Cassie in Everything is Perfect, her journey. And now everybody puts their own lens and their own experience on it. And that has been really surprising to me. I did a book club about 2 weeks ago and I organized it myself and ran it in a local coffee shop where I've actually wrote most of the book. And the discussion with the women that came along was, you know, it was amazing, actually. I was like, they thought, well, I thought this was going to happen and I thought this was going to happen. And so that's been a really learning experience to see everybody's take on a story.
Max, there was a lot to love about Cassie Prince and her somewhat chaotic journey in Everything is Perfect. So much of that was also worrying. So can you tell me how you came to be writing about Cassie? Was it a particular incident or set of circumstances that set you down this path?
Do you know, the other day I listened to the interview you did with Jane Tara on her book, Tilda is Visible. I actually really resonated with the things that she said about being at an age when she could write, only being at the age that she could write the book was now. And I think the same goes with Cassie. I had to be that age to be able to write it. And I had to be thinking of those things and experiencing to a certain degree some of the things that she was experiencing to actually write about her journey in her mid-40s, mid to late 40s. So yeah, I think that was the time for me to write this book. I mean, I did write another book before this that's languishing on the laptop. And this, but this was the first time I've actually really resonated with a character. And I was just with her all the way through. It was just almost like every experience I've been thinking about, I put into her, and then obviously more and more than that, which I did, which I've never done. I think when I got to 45, 46, I suddenly started looking around me at, I'm going to be really honest here, all the mums at the school that were in their early 30s, and looking at myself and going, oh, how did I get to like 40? How did I get to this age? What happened to the last 10 years of my life? I don't know where it's gone. Just things like my knee started to ache and I had to stop running because I found that I had arthritis in it. And that was a massive shock. And suddenly the looks that I've been used to getting throughout my 20s and 30s, I suppose I do talk a lot about the male gaze in this book, especially through the eyes of Chris that Cassie meets right at the beginning of the book. And that was an age when I suddenly realized actually men weren't actually looking at me as much anymore. That was a bit of a shock, if I'm going to be really blunt. So it was all those things. Yeah. And then it was all the things about being in a relationship, like being married in a relationship for 20 years. You know, I was struggling with that at the same time of starting to feel like my youth was going. So yeah, that's what I started writing down in the mornings in my notebook. And that's what developed into Cassie.
Yeah, fantastic. I love it. I want to tell you something really funny, because that just, what you've just described has resonated with me as well. I was speaking to somebody at my car servicing center yesterday. We were talking about whether or not something was necessary to be done with my car. And I feel very firmly that I didn't think something needed to be done. And the young woman that I was speaking to said, well, look, if you were my mum, I would be suggesting that you don't do this. And I felt so very small. I mean, I have a 26-year-old son, so I'm no spring chicken. But and I'm guessing that she was around the same age as my son. So I could very well be her mum. But it's just the way that she said it made me think, am I some doddery old fool who doesn't know what's what? Yeah, I feel that in my bones, what you are saying about, you know, this aging process and suddenly not feeling like you did 10 years ago or 15 years ago or whatever the case may be. So I totally understand.
It's a journey because there's a character actually in that Cassie, when she starts temping, if anybody's read that part, she actually gets greeted by, which is for a similar situation to what you've just talked about, by a young girl at the reception, you know, and who looks at her like, oh, well, the mums we get, you know, can't quite believe that she's there as a temp when she's in her 40s. So, yeah, I'm with you, Claudine, there.
Just hilarious. Anyway, so for those who haven't read the book yet, Max, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the story.
Cassie Prince, she lives in a beautiful suburb near the beach. She's got a successful husband and two children and even like an oodle dog. So actually, from the outside, everything should be perfect, shouldn't it, really? But as we were just talking about, you know, she's got to her mid-40s and she's got a bit of a niggle that she doesn't actually quite feel like herself anymore. And, you know, she's panicking, like we just talked about aging. And she learns that her mother is really sick in the UK and is very close to passing away. So that brings up lots of issues from her childhood that she's not actually ever addressed. And I think that is also a subject of things that happen to us at this age. We can't keep pushing stuff down anymore. And all this is going on right at the beginning of term. And on the first day of term, she goes to her local coffee shop after she's dropped her children off at school and sees a new dad at the getting his coffee with his little girl. And he's a new dad at the school who's recently lost his wife to cancer. So he's a widower trying to cope by himself. And that starts off, the moment he looks at her, that starts off a whole chain of events through the book, which I'll just leave it there.
All right. Well, we'll talk around other events in the book a little bit later. But I think what struck me in reading this book, and you've touched on it a little bit, Max, is that Cassie has a lot going on in her life. And I think the thing that resonated with me as well was that there are lots of aspects of Cassie's life that she's grieving, and yet she couldn't acknowledge or, in fact, even deal with it. So she keeps finding ways to distract herself from this grief, you know, with shopping, with exercise, with drinking, with Botox, and chasing after a new school dad.
Yes.
So can you tell me more about this and why you wanted to explore this in the novel?
People have asked me, who is Cassie based on? And I've said to them, no writer ever says, oh yes, it's based on one specific person. It's just experience, isn't it? It's people you notice when you're at the mall, or, you know, it's a conversation you have with women on a girls' night, on mum's night out. You know, it's all those facets of different people, you know, that I brought together in one person. And that's where the influence came from. It was just, people, you know, I've exercised too much. I know that. And I know that's what Cassie has done. And I see it around me as well. You know, women are desperate to stop what the change in their bodies by trying to do 50 burpees. And doing 50 burpees now is no good for you. So it was like all of those different kind of parts of people I brought together in her. I've had friends who have, you know, said, I've got five of that dress from that thing. I've never worn one of them. And they can't afford to buy five dresses from one shop at one time. No, it's just on the credit card. But for a brief moment, it makes them feel better. And I think that is the roller coaster of emotions that we go through. Really, a lot of people in their 40s at this time, especially with that, you know, juggling the elderly parents as well, you know, that I have seen. I've actually had friends who have been doing this recently, and it is just so hard, whether they're overseas or whether they're up the road. They're just trying to manage teenagers, elderly parents, and doing the whole thing, and a career and a job and doing everything they can do at home. And it just brings people, it just makes people crumble. So, yeah.
So we touched on this a little bit earlier, but visibility for women of a certain age is a topic that is gaining more and more attention of late. Newspaper articles, blog and social media posts, as well as novels, are all highlighting this notion that we are no longer being seen in society. And we only have to look at novels by best-selling author Joanna Nell, and more recently the novel that you mentioned, Tilda Is Visible by Jane Tara, to know that women have long struggled with this as they age. And as you said, Cass is only in her 40s, but she's also grappling with this too, isn't she?
Definitely. I mean, that moment at the beginning when she sees Chris Lancaster for the first time, like she says, she's found men attractive in the last 20 years since she got married. But she says it's never in this hit by truck kind of way. So he just ignites something in her again that she hasn't seen since, you know, when she was in her early 20s. And I think that's what she grasps onto, that whole topic of being invisible. For a while, it actually makes her visible again. And she feels relevant. But really what she needs to do is actually, you know, which I've learned this recently, is actually look inside herself for answers, isn't it? As you know, rather than relying on other people to make her feel seen.
Yeah. Talking about the way in which she tries to make herself feel seen again. Yes, you're right, in the sense that her attraction to Chris and his affability in many ways kind of makes her, he's so nice. He responds to her and he makes her feel good, I guess, you know, and just in the way that he deals with her. But it's a rather unhealthy obsession that she kind of develops for him, and her desire to feel needed takes her in a direction that is just so unhealthy, I think. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Without giving anything away, her husband, John, travels a lot for work and also is going through his own crisis as well, I would say, his own midlife, figuring out what he wants. So, you know, her obsession with Chris is kind of what she thinks is an answer to what is going on around her, which is really not the right answer. And then I also wanted to look at what we don't know about people underneath the surface. I think this is relative to your question, Claudia, is that, you know, we don't know. There's people around us. We've got no idea what's going on. And they may put on this happy, you know, smiley, friendly face to everybody else. But really, a lot of the time, we've got no idea, you know, and until it gets to a point when if they're really undergoing some kind of stress, as in Cassie's As in Cassie does, they actually get to a point when it all crumbles down.
So I want to talk about unlikable characters. And I've spoken on the podcast before about this notion of having of writers having to make their characters likable in order to be relatable or just for obvious readability factors. What's your take on this? And were you concerned about writing a somewhat unlikable character?
I didn't actually think about it until recently when I ventured for about 5 seconds onto Goodreads and then I came straight back off again. I don't even know why I went on there, really. I read things that said, do not go onto there. It's like, do not do it. You know, and everybody has their own opinion about every book going, don't they? It's just all so impartial to whatever you've gone through. So it's all fine. All reviews are good. It's fine. But it's only, I do realize that Cassie can be really liked or actually really disliked. It's kind of like one or the other. There's no middle ground with her, really. I'm actually really pleased that I created a character like that. She's not middling around in the middle, and that's what she didn't want. She didn't want to be that invisible person anymore. Yeah, no, I'm really happy that I created a character like that.
Yeah,
if people can talk about her, then I think it's a success.
Yeah,
really.
I couldn't agree with you more. And talking about her, there is one scene in the novel, and I think that I made mention of this to you once before. There's this one scene in the novel that just made me cover my eyes and go, no, 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 I can't believe you're doing that. And obviously we can't talk about that actual scene without spoilers. But this is one thing that makes Cassie quite memorable, just in terms of the lengths that she was willing to go to. And so I guess I wondered how, as a writer, you got inside Cassie's head.
I suppose it's like being, I've never been an actor, but I suppose this is the closest I've ever come to being one. I had to put myself, what is the worst thing a person could do in this situation? That's the kind of path I was on when I was writing those scenes. And actually wrote it down. Like, it was just, what can I do to push her to the next level? And sometimes it did. It made me feel really, like you said, really uncomfortable. And slightly nauseous because I was just like going with it. And I suppose it's writers that do write crime. I mean, I don't know how they do write about serial killers or get into the mind of somebody, you know, not the Cassie that, but get into the mind of somebody like that. This is the first time I've ever really just been such in the zone on the page with my writing that I just couldn't leave the seat. It was just like, I have to take this to the next level and then the next level again. And I actually did a course with Nadine Davidoff, who is an amazing writing coach and editor, a few years ago. And if anybody has the chance to do any course with her ever, I would get on there and sign yourself up to whatever she does. She's amazing. And she was talking about a poet, actually, in one of her courses, that it was talking about the Spanish flamenco dancer. And this poet, sorry, I can't remember his name now, had written about a flamenco dancer dancing close to the flame, and that's what they do. And she said, in writing, if you can take your character close to the flame and pull them back time and time again, then you'll have your reader invested in them. And I've never forgotten that imagery of the flamenco dancer. So if I think of something not working now, and if I think of a piece of writing go, it's a bit, then I think, okay, let's just take them close to the flame. So that's what I was doing, really, when I was writing these scenes, especially the one you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
it's so interesting because obviously strong reactions to books and characters and plots are obviously what makes a book memorable. And so I think you've done an incredible job with, you know, whether you fall on the side of disliking Cassie or you fall on the side of liking Cassie, what you have created is a compulsively readable novel and something that people want to keep going with because they're so either horrified by what she's doing or so invested in what she's doing.
Yeah.
They have to see it through. And I think it's a masterclass in character development and character arc. And so congratulations on that. You've done an incredible job.
Yeah, thank you. I did actually have a friend of mine, actually my old boss, sent me a message saying, yes, Max, I really, the whole time I was going, oh, I don't even know if I like this woman, really. And I was reading it and I thought, I don't even know if I like you. And you're conflicting me with all these emotions I was going through. By the end, he goes, that was it. You totally 360 me. I was just like, I loved her by the last page. And I was just like, oh, yeah. Right.
So to that end, Max, talking about how you got yourself inside of Cassie's head, but I wondered if you had to do any research to bring her story to the page, you know, especially in regards to her unprocessed grief and trauma.
You know, all the strange, you all know this, Connie, all the strange things that writers Google. If you look through the Google history, it'd be really confronting, really, to lots of people. I had to research specific things about what, I know this sort of gives things away, but about the hospital system in the UK. You know, I haven't been there, I haven't lived there for over 20 years. So I thought I just really wanted to make sure how the process of having a sick relative in the hospital system worked still over there. Mostly I just write about how it would feel. I mean, my parents are still in the UK and they're in their late 70s. And I know there's going to be a time come, you know, in the not too distant future when I'm going to be going over there a lot to see them and look after them. So I was just journaling really what that would feel like to be in that situation. And then unresolved things, unresolved kind of emotions we have with our parents. You know, I was also writing all of that down and talking to lots of friends about, you know, how their relationships are with their mum and dad now, or if they're still alive, you know, what are the things they've gone through? And, you know, because, you know, my family wasn't perfect, as they say, coming from divorced parents when I was very young. So, yeah, I was talking to a lot of people, really, and just writing down my own experiences of how I felt about being away from them. Like you said, it does bring up a lot of emotion, you know, being so far away. So I had to channel that into it.
If there was one thing that you would like readers to take away from your novel, what would that be?
It's interesting, that question, isn't it? You know, I think the one thing is not keep things inside. Let's just talk to people around you, especially as women and, you know, especially with our friends. You know, I've always found the best times are if I can sit with a friend and have a glass of wine and actually just be really honest and just go, do you know what? I'm feeling like this right now. And it's a really hard thing to do. But, you know, I've been on girls' weekends away when friends have actually come out with stuff and we've just all been there for each other. So if it doesn't have to be a big group of friends. If you only have, you know, one really close friend or a sister or family member or something, I just think that keeping, locking everything inside of you the whole time is just really not healthy. So I think that was the biggest takeaway from this, really, is just, you know, let share things before they become too much.
Max, as I alluded to in my introduction, you and I have been moving in some common circles, writing buddy circles and attending book events together for a few years now. And in fact, I was actually present with you at the event where you pitched your novel to your publisher. And that's a day that I look back on and I think, wow, 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 how amazing was that? But what I wanted to ask you specifically about was, how important to your journey do you think having these writing groups and communities around you been?
Oh my goodness. If I was doing this just by myself, I like to say that would be carrying on, but no, I just think the biggest piece of advice, if you're wanting to get a book published or you're starting out writing, is just to meet as many people as you can, go to as many book launches as you can, introduce yourself to people. You know, people will always, authors will always remember you if you go back and talk about writing. So go to book events like writers festivals, meet people, do the online pitching on the Australian Society of Authors, have that really good online pitching thing. And yeah, create a community. I do really think that, you know, I've had a group of writers, none of us were published, and we just all stuck together and got on weekly Zoom calls and just were there for each other. So yeah, really, really important, because everybody's just behind each other the whole time.
You have a day job, and I wondered how you continue to balance your work commitments with your writing. And is it different now that you've, you know, had one book published, or is it the same routine as before?
I've always stuck to what works. Right now, the minute I've dropped the boys off at school, I go and get a coffee, or I come back home and I just sit my bub on the seat. And if I can do 600, 700 words, then that's it. And that's what I did for Everything Is Perfect. I just consistently did 700 words probably a day, 5 days a week. And then I'm there for all the other stuff, probably from 11 till 4 is when I'm working on the day job. And me and my husband have a business together. So, you know, there's flexibility, a lot more flexibility than if I was having to go into an office in the city. And, you know, he's my husband, so that's fine. I can just I'll do that later, darling. Yeah, and he's been really supportive as well. It's obviously there's days when I do have to do stuff. I juggle things around, but if I can stick to that window in the morning, then that works for me and I can happily do both.
Wonderful. Okay. Is there one thing that you know about yourself as a writer now that you didn't know before you were published?
That I didn't know before I was published. Oh my goodness. I've always been quite, once I hold on to something, I don't let go of it. So I still know, I'm still the same of that. But what I don't know about myself, you know, it's that question about sitting at the laptop and the writing. That's, you know, that's where I'm in my comfortable place. The bit I've learned about myself since being published is doing all the stuff that comes around the edge. Like I didn't, you know, having to do live radio interviews with Far North Queensland, and which was actually great. He was really fun. And, you know, I actually do podcasts and live and Insta, Facebook live. Oh my goodness, I never thought that I'd be able to do a live video link on Facebook. But I seem to have drawn this person out of myself that was just hiding away in there. So yeah, Dax, my husband, said, he goes, oh, I like this new version of you, Max. I was like, oh, thanks. So that was the bit I'm surprised about. But I could actually do that because my natural tendency is to go and hide in a corner with a book or a notepad. You know, so actually pull that extroverted piece of me, which is kind of this section, out. Yeah, that's a bit that surprised me that I'm actually, I can do that. But then I still have to go and lie down like 2 hours afterwards.
That's not an uncommon thing, Max. It's something that people don't understand as part of your publishing journey, that you actually then need to go out and sell your book. And I don't mean that in a physical sense, but you know, you need to be able to talk comfortably about your book with people you've never met before. You need to be able to get behind a microphone and talk about the virtues of your book and, you know, your inspiration behind your book and your characters and whatnot. And that's not something that comes very easily to a lot of writers, because most of us are introverted. We're in our happy place behind our computer screen in our office, locked away from everybody else. And then suddenly you're flung out into this world that for many people you don't even know exists before your book is published. So it is a steep, steep learning curve, particularly for debut authors.
Definitely. And the social media side of things as well. Even my dad said, you're putting quite a lot of posts on about your book. And I was like, yeah, sorry, Dad, it's not the usual for me on a beach picture. Yeah, so it's that fine balance between getting it right and what putting, you know, doing the videos and the reels and all of that kind of thing. That's been a real learning experience as well, actually. Get ready for anybody who's about to go there.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. So what do your family think about your book?
Actually, I posted a copy to my father-in-law a couple of weeks ago, who's in the UK, because it's not out there yet. So he goes, it's a very saucy opening chapter. Yeah.
Did you tell him just you wait?
Exactly. Very saucy. And my mum actually was really proud, because I did. She's the one that took me to all the libraries when I was a kid. You know, me and my sister in the 1980s, and I do have her on the first line of acknowledgements at the back. And she sent me a really gorgeous photo holding my book. And she'd obviously sent the picture to all her friends, because the tagline was, this is my daughter and her book. And she was just holding it. And it was just, that was beautiful, actually. It was, a real moment for her to do that. And she's not somebody that easily says how she feels. So that meant a lot.
Are you working on something else? Something that you'd like to share with listeners?
Yeah, I know I am. And I'm not very good at talking about stuff when I'm working on it. It's almost like it's locked away in my head. And I feel like if I verbalize it yet, it's just going to lose something. I think I read that in that Stephen King book on writing once. And not the same Stephen King, but I think that's what he does. He doesn't talk about it, I don't think, until he's written the first draft, which probably takes him less time than me. But yeah, I'm writing something. I do have a new character, a new woman. I'm in her head right now. So she's got hold of me now. But we'll just let her percolate. I think Joanna Nell said in an interview, I heard her say a few months ago, that her characters just walk around having cups of tea for a while until they realise what they're meant to be doing. So yeah, she's doing more than having a cup of tea, but yeah, I'm getting there with her.
Fantastic. I love that. Thank
Yeah.
you so much.
Yeah.
Max, if listeners wanted to learn more about you and your work, how can they find you?
I've got a website. It's maxinefawcett.com. And I'm on Instagram, Maxine Fawcett Writer. And I think that's the same as on Facebook as well. And I'd love to hear from anybody who's read Everything is Perfect. I do get a lot of messages from bots on my website. So if somebody just send me a real message, it would be great.
And you also have a newsletter, something that people can subscribe to as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about
that? I do. Yeah, you can do that through the website as well. Look, let's be honest, I've still got to get into my flow with the newsletter thing. I don't know what it is. And I see like people like Kylie Orr, and they just do great newsletters. And yeah, that's the next thing, Claudia, I need to learn about how to write a really good newsletter. Vanessa McCausland does a really great one as well, actually, her Beautiful Words one. Every time I read it, I'm just like, oh my goodness, like really just wrote that? Oh, Kate Mildenhall as well. Yeah, I need to learn from all these people that write amazing newsletters.
You write you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Max, I've had the best time chatting with you today. I wish you every success with Everything is Perfect and the other novels, no doubt, to follow. Thank you very much for joining me on Talking Aussie Books today.
Brilliant. Thanks, Claudine. It's been a real honour to be on here. So thank you so much.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading.